I'm Darlene. Melody's my co-host. We are two Southern Christian women who take turns telling each other historical true crime stories. And we're so happy that you're with us this week. If you've been enjoying the podcast and want to support us, you can buy us a coffee. The link will be on our show notes and on our website. We also appreciate so much when you rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast.
Nicknamed the Sunshine State, Florida brings to mind images of sandy beaches, palm trees, and the most magical place on earth. But before Walt Disney made it a top tourist destination, up until the 1920s, Florida was still a part of America's frontier. A watery wilderness, a sweltering hot swampland filled with mosquitoes, snakes, alligators, and even black panthers. Florida's early settlers had grit, if nothing else. And somehow those poor souls managed to survive an environment that was uncommonly harsh. And while most of that's changed, every once in a while you can still catch a glimpse of old-time Florida. And the next time you have a week's vacation, take a day or two and go swimming in the Itchinitucky Springs. Or go to the Everglades National Forest for a swamp buggy tour. And find a freshwater river that feeds from a spring and go tubing or canoeing. And find a restaurant that serves swamp cabbage, gator tail, or mullet and grits. Make sure you stop by an old roadside fruit stand for some fresh Florida produce, cane syrup, and boiled peanuts.
The sources for this episode are going to be listed on our show notes.
And today, Darlene's dog is being a little naughty, so you may hear him in the background. Normally, he's pretty good.
Yeah, but he's mad today. He wants to be in here and
with us. Mm-hmm. So if we're not able to edit out everything, just know that's just Rufus being bad.
Yep. Well, it's the first day of summer.
So to commemorate that, we stopped in this morning before recording and got us some iced coffees. A local shop, Bold Coffee Company.
I'd never been there before. I am really impressed.
Yeah, I've been there several times because, one, I love to buy local. You know, so it's local to Asheboro, North Carolina here, both of our hometowns right now.
Yeah.
And I know the owners. The husband grew up with my kids, and they're just the sweetest couple.
I was impressed with their summer menu.
Yeah, so what'd you get?
I got a coconut mocha with white chocolate drizzle.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah.
I'll have to try that.
What did you get?
I got the Thick Boy. Honestly, I ordered it just because I liked the name, but it's delicious. It's like a banana latte, and it has cold banana foam on the top. And man, it was like drinking a piece of banana cream pie.
That sounds so good.
Yeah.
Next time I want to try something with lavender.
Oh, yeah, you have to. They have some great drinks with lavender in it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is just a shout out, Bold Coffee Company.
Woohoo!
Yep. If you're in the area, go stop and see them. Get you some coffee.
Okay, so I'm Darlene.
I'm Melody.
This is
Hard Times and True Crimes.
So I want to tell you a story about a man named Edgar Watson, who was born in Ridge Springs, South Carolina, on November 11th in 1855.
Okay.
His mother's name was Ellen Addison Watson, and his father was Elijah Watson. He had one sister named Minnie, and if Edgar grew up to be a brutal man, and he did, he inherited that from his dad. His dad was an angry, alcoholic, Civil War veteran. He actually worked as a warden for the South Carolina prison, where he was known to just kind of be sadistically violent with the inmates.
You do so many of these sadistic people.
But he loved to fight. His dad did.
Mm-hmm.
He loved to fight almost as much as he loved to drink. And during one of these knife fights, his dad was cut in an almost complete circle around one of his eyes. And so after that, his nickname was Ring Eye Lige.
Oh, my goodness. There's two kinds of drunks.
Mm-hmm.
The mean ones that like to fight.
Right.
Not a good combination. Or the goofy ones.
Yes.
So they either get drunk and goofy or they get drunk and mean.
Yes. So, he was mean.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yes, he was. So old Ring Eye, he was also known to be cruel to his family.
Yeah.
He was especially cruel to his son, Edgar. The boys, they get it the worst. He was so mean that eventually Mrs. Watson ended up taking her kids and left in the middle of the night while her husband was out on a bender. They ran away to Columbia County, Florida, in Lake City, where Mrs. Watson had family. And I'm particularly interested in this because my great-grandma Thomas, her family were pioneer Floridians.
Okay.
From the same area. And so I'm sure she would have heard about this case. So it was exciting for me. Have you ever heard of Itchituckney Springs?
No. Say that again.
Itchituckney?
Never heard of it.
Okay. Well, if you ever go to Florida, you need to go there. And that's only about 25 miles from where this place was, Lake City.
Okay.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I want to hear more about that after we record.
Okay. So Mrs. Watson, she would actually never go back to her husband, which, yeah, I mean, that says something because usually they go back.
Right.
And she never remarried. Her two children, Minnie and Edgar, were raised up there in North Florida. Their mother put them first, and she did her best to teach them manners and just what a good, peaceful, honest way of life was like. Because, you know, for many years, life with their father had been pretty volatile.
So hard for them.
Mm-hmm. Minnie would grow up, fell in love, and she got married to a nice, prominent young man. They ended up having a wonderful life together.
Oh, good.
So one of the kids did well. Mm-hmm. Let's see about the other one.
Right. I know it's going somewhere rough.
Edgar Watson also grew up to become a big, strong, reputable young man. He almost embodied what a Southern gentleman should be in those days. His presence just kind of demanded attention and respect. He was over 6 feet tall. He had red hair, a red beard, these striking blue eyes. And although he usually kept in control of his temper, he was not afraid of a good confrontation.
Well, you said redhead, and I was already thinking timber.
Yeah, he was the kind of person that you knew you didn't want to cross.
Yeah.
You kept him on your good side.
Well, you know, those gingers, they have a reputation.
But he could be generous, you know, if he liked you, and he was serious, but he could also be pretty funny. So people liked him.
Yeah. And I love red hair.
Yeah, me too.
So I'm sitting here. Like you said, the red hair and the blue eyes. Was he really good looking guy?
He was a good looking guy. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
He was. And he ended up marrying a well-bred young lady named Jane Dial. They rented a farm together, and he proved himself to be a good husband, a loving dad, a hard worker, and a successful farmer in the beginning anyway.
So things are going good for him.
Yeah, they are. One year, though, when it was time to cash in on crops, Watson traveled to O'Brien, Florida with some fellow farmers. Some of these farmers were family and some were neighbors and friends. They made a trip like that every year together because, it was a celebratory time. Like you and I have discussed on the podcast before, farmers were paid once a year.
Mm-hmm.
This was their payday when it was time to cash in those crops. And it wasn't uncommon for them, you know, to go to a saloon in whatever town they were in, selling their crops, and celebrate with a lot of alcohol.
Sure, yeah.
And that's just what Edgar and his fellow farmers did that night. But this particular night, Edgar had a little too much to drink. And it was in this town where they were strangers. He decided to get on top of a table and make this speech. Okay. He was acting like really arrogant and...
Well, I thought you were going to say he got on top of a table and danced.
No, thankfully he did not do that. But one of his cousins got nervous because he didn't want them to get jumped. You've seen those bar scenes.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't take much and they're, you know, who does this guy think he is? And these native Floridians, they were tough.
Mm-hmm.
They had to be. They were used to defending themselves against scorching heat, rattlesnakes, gators, panthers, bobcats.
Oh, goodness.
And they could be a hot-headed bunch.
They had to be tough. I mean, they were living in tough times.
They were. And I wouldn't call them arrogant, but I wouldn't call them lowly or meek either. Mm-hmm. So let's just say a lot of men were killed in those days over perceived disrespect.
Mm-hmm.
If they felt like he was being cocky.
Yeah.
When you think of it like that, you can see why the cousin was like, oh my goodness.
Uh-huh. What's he going to get us into now?
Right. Yeah. So his cousin hurried over and tried to persuade him to get down off of that table. Edgar did not like that very much, and he responded by kicking his cousin right in the face.
Oh, goodness.
But the cousin didn't give up, and he reached up this time to try to pull Edgar down, not to hurt him, but just to get him to quiet down. And Edgar tried kicking him in the face again, but this time he caught his foot. And because he was so drunk, that threw him off balance, and he came tumbling down off the table onto his knee, and his kneecap was shattered.
Oh.
And surgery for fractures at that time had the potential really to do more harm than good.
Oh, I can imagine. I mean, it wasn't one where they would go to the dentist to get their knee fixed, though, was it?
No. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So Watson was stuck in bed with this busted knee for months while his farm pretty much went to pot.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And I guess he used that time to stew and blame his cousin for that predicament. When he was able to get out of bed, Watson went and confronted his cousin. And I don't know what his original intentions were, but Mr. Watson ended up killing his cousin that night in a knife fight.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. Wow. He was serious.
Knowing the sheriff would soon be after him for murder, because there had been witnesses, he hurried back home, loaded his wagon with a few belongings, his wife and kids, and they left Florida.
Who were the witnesses?
Okay. Just some bystanders. They were probably at a bar, from what it sounded like, but I can't be 100% sure of that.
Okay.
When they left Florida, they stopped in Georgia for a short while, and then they went on to Arkansas, and the family eventually made their way up into Indian Territory in what's now known as Oklahoma.
Okay.
While in Indian Territory, Watson met and became friends with the infamous outlaw, Belle Starr.
I don't know that outlaw.
You don't know her?
No.
Oh my goodness. Okay, well, I'm going to tell you about her then.
Okay.
She was actually raised in a prominent family in Missouri. Her dad ran an inn and her mother was a pianist. Her mother raised her to be a lady. Belle even attended a girls' academy for her education, but her daddy and older brother taught her how to shoot guns and ride horses. So when Belle was a teenager, the Civil War broke out. She and her family were Confederate sympathizers. Her older brother that she was super close with, Bud, he led a gang of Confederate guerrillas. He became part of, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Quantrill's Raiders. Do you know? Okay.
No.
So they were basically like a guerrilla, unofficial.
During the Civil War?
Yeah.
Okay.
So they thwarted the efforts of the Union. Really, they killed a lot of them. It was said that they would like wear their fingers and stuff and necklaces like around their necks.
Well, that's kind of barbaric.
Yeah. You know who was in that?
No.
Was Jesse James. And
really?
His brother, Frank James.
Okay, I am so surprised that I have never heard of this. Because
yeah.
I have studied the Civil War a lot. I know a lot of, I don't want to brag that I know a lot. I know enough.
Yeah.
And I have never heard of that.
So look it up. They're also called bushwhackers. But
I have heard of the bushwhackers,
okay.
But
yeah.
I didn't, what was the name of that particular?
Quantrill's Raiders.
I am looking that up, though.
Definitely look it up. It's really interesting. But at 15 years old, Belle Starr would go on to fight alongside her brother, unofficially, of course, because she was a girl.
Mm-hmm.
But she idolized her brother and the Quantrill's Raiders. She just felt like they were brave heroes who defended the Confederacy. Her brother one day was eaten at the home of some Southern sympathizers when a group of Union soldiers showed up. He tried to run, but he ended up being shot by the Union troops. So, of course, you know, Belle was just devastated.
Was that in front of her?
It wasn't. But she just kind of romanticized them.
Mm-hmm.
I think she did before. But if she did before, she did even more.
Now.
After that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like I mentioned, Jesse and his brother Frank, you know, they were also members of the Quantrill's Raiders. And as we all know, after the war, they would break off and start their own gang, which was known as the James Younger Gang.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I remember that.
They would rob trains, steal horses. They committed murder. So Jesse and Frank, they were pure out criminals. But Belle Starr's father, he still saw them as friends who'd bravely fought alongside his son. And so he'd allow them to hide out on his farm in Missouri when they were running from the law. Belle Starr would meet the first of three of her outlaw husbands after a bank robbery. Her first husband's name was Jim Reed, and he had also been a raider, but he became part of the Jesse James Younger Gang. Belle loved her some bad boys and constantly found herself on the wrong side of the law. Her husbands, they were dangerous criminals for sure. And there's no doubt that she supported him. She hit him out. Like I said before, I think she saw her brother and them.
Yeah.
And throughout her life, she is said to have committed too many crimes to count.
Oh, wow.
In 1874, I know she was wanted for a stagecoach robbery, but she was actually only ever convicted of horse theft. Oh. For that crime, she ended up spending 9 months in jail in Detroit and then was sent back to her home in Indian Territory.
Okay.
But whatever she was in life, in death, she was catapulted to fame as the Wild West Princess Outlaw Belle Star. And by all accounts, when Mr. Watson first came to the area, he and Belle Star and her last husband, Jim Star, they were all great friends. Watson rented some land and lived only about 7 miles from the Stars. They would visit each other and just drink together, you know, all that kind of stuff. Things were good between them. Mr. Watson, he had a good reputation there among his neighbors. He worked hard. Everybody loved his family. There was no doubt he really did have a great family. But somehow or another, Sam Starr and Mr. Watson had a business deal that went bad, and it was probably something illegal. Not exactly sure what it was. There's nothing on record to say that the two of them ever had words over it. But on the morning of February 3rd in 1889, just 3 days before her 41st birthday, Belle Star rode her horse to Edgar Watson's house, and the two of them argued over the money that she felt he owed her husband.
Yeah.
Her husband had actually just went out of town.
Okay.
So I guess when he was gone, she was like, he's about to pay my husband
his money. Yeah, I'm going to get that money.
So they had a heated exchange. And Belle informed Watson that she knew about his murderous past and that if he did not pay up, she would go to the law.
Oh, that's interesting.
There was a witness there that said he'd heard Watson threaten to kill Belle. And again, I don't know who this witness was, but I did find that in an actual newspaper from the time, from 1889. So that evening, Belle rode her horse to meet with some friends. Like I said, her husband was out of town. She went to a man named Jack Rowe's house. Mr. Watson, he was actually there when she came. But as soon as Belle came in, he was noticeably agitated and he left the room. It didn't seem to bother Belle, though. She did mention to them that he threatened to kill her, but she continued visiting with her friends and drank some more alcohol before she headed out alone.
She wasn't really worried about it, I guess.
No, she was not.
She'd been around some pretty bad guys, I guess.
Yeah. They said there was only ever one lawman that was brave enough to come on her property and arrest somebody.
Oh, wow.
And she ended up thinking the world of him because he was so brave, and they became really good friends.
he earned her respect.
But her last two husbands were Indians, and so they lived in Indian Territory, a dangerous area.
Yeah. She has to be bad too.
Right.
To live in those, in that area and to not be afraid of all these other criminals that they're hanging around with.
Right. But she was really good to the poor, to Indians. She fought a lot for their rights. I mean, people aren't one-dimensional. She had a lot of bad, a lot of good, like we all do.
Yeah. You can edit this out, but I'm sitting here going, I don't know which murder you're going to tell me about. Him killing her or her killing him.
Well, that night when she left her friend's house, she was riding along that dark road and somebody shot Belle Star several times in the face and the neck with buckshot from some bushes along the roadside.
So it was an ambush.
When a search party was sent out to investigate the next morning, they found a warm place in the bushes about 15 feet from the road where the murderer had stood. And, you know, they waited to ambush her. And all this I found in newspapers. Clear tracks were followed from that spot directly to the home of Edgar Watson.
Surprise, surprise.
Watson and his wife showed up to Belle's funeral. As soon as it was over, Sam Starr, who was Belle's husband, pulled a gun on him and told him that he was taking him into authorities for murder. Mr. Watson claimed that he was innocent. He said, yes, it was true she had visited his house that day, but when she left, they parted as good friends. He said he personally liked Belle, but she had terrorized a lot of the townsfolk in the nearby town, just outside of Indian Territory. She stole their horses. She held them up with guns and robbed them. he asked the court to consider that it could have been anybody. Belle Starr definitely had other enemies besides him. In fact, she had beat her son really, really bad with a horse whip.
Oh my goodness.
Because he had abused her horse.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, that had just happened. So it wasn't like he was her only enemy, but those tracks leading back to his...
And he had made a threat.
So yeah. In the end, they kind of had to let Mr. Watson go for a lack of hard evidence. Everyone was sure he did it, but as far as the law went, there just wasn't enough proof to convict and hang a man.
Okay. So the tracks that led back to his house, I mean, it was pretty incriminating, but still not enough?
Apparently not.
Okay.
So they let him go.
I mean, I know it wouldn't be enough today, but I'm thinking back then, that would probably have been... I would have thought that it would have been enough.
He was named in the newspaper, though, as a suspect. To this day, if you go back and read about her murder, his name's going to be in there.
They probably all say it like it's a fact.
Yeah.
Even though he wasn't convicted.
Right. And again, her family always believed Edgar Watson was her killer. However, Belle Starr's death is officially unsolved and one of the great mysteries of the Wild West
to this day. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Mr. Watson decided once again that he needed to get out of Dodge.
Yeah, I'm sure he does. Because when you hang around with other criminals, you know they're coming for you.
Exactly. And by this time, between Florida, Georgia, Arkansas, and Indian Territory, Mr. Watson had been accused of 4 murders.
Oh, okay, but you've only told us of 2.
I've only told of 2, but that's what I found in newspapers.
But he had already been accused of 4.
He had been accused of 4 murders. Yes.
Hmm.
But he figured that enough time had passed that he could slowly make his way back to Florida. You know, it took time. They were traveling by horse and wagon.
Yeah. Dude should have kept going to California.
Yes.
Kept going west.
So he made his way back to Florida, and he was in Arcadia, Florida, when he got in a dispute with a man named Bass Quinn. He was a cowboy, basically. A fight broke out between the two of them, and Watson killed Mr. Quinn.
Good gracious, this dude.
I know. But when the law came, he told authorities, he had killed him, but it had been in self-defense.
I knew you were going to say that.
No one had witnessed the murder, and Quinn was kind of known for being a little bit rough. So they just took Watson's word for it, and he was not charged. But in the 1880s, Watson decided to move down to the 10,000 Islands in the Everglades. It was a small chain of islands off the coast of southwest Florida. He bought 40 acres along the Chatham Bend River. Now, in those days, South Florida, it was very primitive.
Oh.
The frontier. It was like
frontier.
Okay. Really. There were pros and cons to living out there, but for most people, those cons definitely outweighed the pros. It was, like I had mentioned before, very hard living.
Mm-hmm.
Mosquitoes, you know, swampy.
Swamp. I'm thinking swamp. Yeah.
Yes. Black water, damp, hot, gator and snake infested, mm-hmm. like you would not believe.
You couldn't pay me enough to live along a swamp.
I used to swim in the Peace River as a kid. I'm not exaggerating. I would swim and my dad would be like, come on, get out of the water. We would all be swimming as a family.
Yeah, you're freaking me out. And what is it, a gator or a snake?
Yeah, a big gator. Now, I can't imagine, but it wasn't that big of a deal.
Crazy.
But my dad had lived his whole life there, and he just...
It's all in what you get used to. What seems
really
normal
is.
To you, you just become accustomed to it. Like, yeah, there's danger, but it's there, and I know about it. Like,
yeah.
I would never...
When my kids were little, we lived in Zolfo Springs, and Curtis would be at work, and I would walk them over to the Pioneer Park at Peace River, and we would get in there and swim.
No way!
Yes. It's just funny, because now I've been in North Carolina too long, because when I went back there, my mom and I, we went canoeing on Peace River. And mom could see how scared I was. And mom was scared. I mean, there were gators all along the banks. We were seeing snakes everywhere.
Oh, my.
And mom was like, just sit upright. Don't, if you don't move,
won't chase you.
Stay very still. You're not going to tip out of your canoe. Canoes are tipping over.
And so, those gators were on the banks just waiting for that.
It's me and my mom is behind me. I think Memphis was with us. My boys were with us, my cousins, and, you know, we're in these lines. Well, my son, Elijah, was back there with Oscar, and he tipped out of his canoe. And my mom was like, just keep going.
No, there's nothing we can do. Poor Elijah.
Well, he was with Oscar and he was a grown man. So I was like, okay, I just let Oscar get him. Delina tipped out of her canoe, but she thinks it's funny. So poor she Delina. Would like do stuff like that. No, she's not scared. Delina's not scared.
Delina
of
might
stuff
be
like
meaner
that.
Than the gators. Is that yes, what you're telling me?
That's what I'm telling you. Florida life.
Yeah.
Well, South Central Florida life. So anyway, most people were not up for that kind of life.
No.
And what I'm sharing, that's nothing compared to, you know, living down there in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. It was a perfect place for people with a past, like outlaws. Nobody really asked too many questions because a lot of them, they had their own backstories.
Right.
So Watson started farming. And again, he was almost immediately pretty successful. He raised a few hogs and he started growing sugarcane. Eventually, Watson made enough money to invest in some state-of-the-art equipment to process his sugarcane into cane syrup. Watson bottled it right there at his place, and then once a year, he would transport it on his 70-foot schooner to Key West and to Fort Myers to sell. He had built this big house right there on the river. In fact, it was the biggest in 10,000 Island. Hmm. And his neighbors, they started referring to him as Emperor Watson. Oh. And I think he liked that.
Oh, I'm sure.
One day, he went to visit his sister and his mom, who still lived in Lake City. And he got into an argument with a man whose name was Sam Toland. Watson would end up shooting and killing him.
So what number are we at?
Yeah, this is number 6.
If he is indeed guilty of all the ones.
Right. But instead of Emperor Watson, some of his neighbors started calling him Bloody Watson behind his back.
They even wouldn't say it to his face.
They would not. But believe it or not, he was acquitted of this murder. And the local sheriff told him, though, he said, look, I'm going to let you off, but you need to get yourself back to the 10,000 Islands and don't ever come back to Lake City. And Watson agreed. Watson would go back to his farm and he started buying up land. And he kind of even started pushing some other farmers to sell him their land so that he could expand his business.
He does sound like a good businessman.
Yeah, I really think he was. He also started making rum down there and selling it. He made a lot of money. And a lot of people, you know, sold him their places and moved away. It was rumored that he wanted this man's land, but the man would not sell.
Did he kill him?
He ended up dead.
Oh, seriously? I was joking.
No, he did end up dead. And the man's wife ended up selling his property. Yeah.
Well,
so I don't know.
He's a good businessman, but he also has some unscrupulous ways of getting business, I guess.
He really does. And trouble just did seem to follow Watson, no matter how successful he became. One year while he was selling his syrup at an auction in Key West, he got into an argument with a local named Adolphus Santini over some of his prices. And Bloody Watson held Santini down and slit his throat.
My goodness, this guy's like really legit a serial killer.
Yeah. Well, luckily for Santini, some bystanders were there and were able to pull Watson off of him, and he miraculously survived.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So, of course, this is a pretty big deal, but Watson paid the man $900, which in those days was no small fortune.
Right.
And he ended up dropping the charges of attempted murder. So he never, you know, faced any consequences for that either. And I know that sounds crazy that they wouldn't face charges, but I'm telling you, those old Floridians were resistant to bringing in the law to settle their disputes. When they brought in the law, it was serious. I think I told you, my great-grandma Thomas that I always talk about, her dad and her brother were shot during a sharecropping dispute by the landowner.
Well, yeah, your mom has a song and a video about that on YouTube.
Yeah, she does. She sure does. Sharecropper's son.
Yes.
Yeah. So
Sherry White. Let's go ahead and call her out. Sherry
absolutely.
White.
Listen to that song. You know, my grandma was just the best storyteller ever. And I would spend the night with her on those hot, hot Florida nights because she had no air conditioning. And I would just lay there and she would tell me all these great stories. I think it's why I love history to this day. And she was a little bit morbid. So she would tell me the real fairy tales.
Yes.
From,
yeah,
you know, from back in the day. But she would also tell me, you know, these true stories about her life. And I remember I was like, well, did he go to jail? You know, the man and she was like, no. And she said, oh, he gave our family some horses.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So that was not like unheard
of. It wasn't unheard of. But I feel like it was in most other places. I think Florida was just, I don't know. It was
just different down there.
Yeah. Yep. So Watson went back home after that because he was acquitted again. And bought some more land on the 10,000 Islands on Lost Man's River. He started farming that land as well. And of course, as always, it proved to be prosperous. But one day, Watson found two men, one whose name was Tucker and the other Tucker's nephew. And they were squatting on his property, which honestly wasn't uncommon because, like I said, it was kind of a frontier. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times people would come down there, immigrants or again outlaws and they would squat but this was his land. They maybe didn't even know that because there was so much of it, but he wanted them to know they needed to get off of his property and they refused to do that.
Well, they didn't know who they were dealing with.
No, they didn't, because they both mysteriously turned up dead,
of course.
But again, there was no hard evidence. So even though local residents by this time believed that Watson was, he was the killer, there were no sheriff deputies down there on 10,000 Islands to investigate. The nearest sheriff, he lived 90 miles away.
Okay. So this guy's very brazen, but he's gotten away with murder many times. So
he is. And he's not a typical criminal. He's successful. He dresses well. It's funny because his family is so different than what you would think they would be like. Okay. His wife was respectable. She had been a teacher. This is not like some white trash down there living in that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So nobody really did anything, but they were watching him at this point. His neighbors, you know, they're kind of feeling a little bit uneasy. Yeah.
I sure wouldn't have crossed them.
A little bit of mistrust in the air. One thing they noticed was that Watson seemed to always hire a bunch of outlaws. And some of these outlaws were extremely dangerous. You know, we're not talking horse theft. We're talking like one of the men had murdered a deputy for sure. Mm. Another man is said to have murdered two other men right out there on Watson's farm. And no big deal was ever made of it by him. Watson, he said, well, you know what? I got to hire whoever's willing to come out here and do the work. This is hard work. He was like, I just have to do what I have to do for my business.
Well, and he wasn't worried about criminals. I mean,
right.
If you're the meanest one,
yeah,
you're not worried about them.
And it said that he would use some of the more vicious criminals to strong arm some of his other workers and some of his neighbors.
That's what I was thinking. Some of his neighbors.
Yeah. So another thing that they noticed was that he never kept the same workers for long. Like every season, these different workers would show up, which you could argue they could have been migrant workers. To them, it was very suspicious. And it was rumored that he was giving them what the locals would call the Watson special. In other words, he was murdering them come payday.
He was taking them to the train station.
Yes. And then as if all that weren't enough, this book came out about the life and death of the bandit queen, Belle Starr.
Oh, my.
That named Watson as her suspected
murderer.
Yes.
Well, no, he's got his name in a book.
Yes, he does. So the locals at this point had become downright fearful, just uneasy with him being there. What was this man capable of? You know, they just didn't know. But honestly, these rumors didn't seem like they bothered Watson one little bit.
He probably was a little bit proud of it.
Yeah, he was prosperous. And look how many times he's probably gone away with murder. And he might even like that people fear him a little bit.
That's what I was going to say. I'm sure he did like that. Oh, the neighbors are afraid of him.
Right.
And, you know, he's keeping them in line.
Exactly. So one day, though, this little black boy who had been fishing for mullet. You know what mullet is?
No.
Mullet is a type of fish. Yeah, down there in Florida. My grandma used to fix us fried mullet and grits.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I just thought it was a bad hairstyle from the 80s.
That too. Okay.
So before there was shrimp and grits, there was mullet and grits?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Mullet was the poor man's shrimp and grits. Poor man's shrimp for mullet for their supper. This little boy ran out of Chatham Bend, terrified, to a local cowboy's house near Chokoloskee. He had been fishing when he saw the body of a woman named Hannah Smith coming up out of the water. Hannah was 6 feet tall and she was 300 pounds. She had been gutted, probably so that she would sink. I'm sure part of her was still sticking. She was a big woman.
Yeah.
And this is like a swampy area.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Can you imagine this kid
seeing that?
They said at first he thought it was like a gator. But anyway.
And I'm wondering what's Hannah done to cross Watson, so.
Well, this woman, of course, she had just so happened to work for Watson. But anyway, again, what did they have, really?
Right.
But then the bodies of two men, one of them an outlaw named Dutchie Melvin, and another woman who had both worked for Watson, they were found murdered on his property as well.
Good night.
Now, this time, the townspeople confronted him. And Watson blamed another local outlaw named Leslie Cox for the murders. Watson told them that he was going to take care of it. And he actually took his boat and went to Fort Myers to ask Sheriff Tippins to deputize him so that he could hunt down Cox and legally kill him.
Oh, my word.
And the sheriff would not do it because, because a man named William Brown had already been to see him. He came to see him because he had heard talk among the townsfolks that they were planning to kill Watson if something was not done. So he was like, look, y'all better get down here and do something because this is escalating really quickly. You need to come investigate this man because these people are ready to take the law into their own hands.
Yeah, I almost feel like they almost have to.
I know.
Because none of them are going to be safe.
Right.
Until he's gone.
Right.
Yeah.
But then, just then, like literally within a day of that happening, this big hurricane blew in and it was a devastating Category 4. Again, I hate to always put myself in the story, but in 2004, we lived through a Category 4 hurricane in Florida, Hurricane Charlie, and it was devastating. And these people didn't have FEMA.
Right.
And nice people from other states coming in, bringing them water and food.
Yeah, 1880s. And they didn't have any social help probably at all.
Right, right. Now, this was 1910.
Oh, okay.
But it was...
Still, we're talking early 1900s.
Exactly. I can't imagine like how devastating it was. And I can tell you that people are just on edge when something like that happens.
I would imagine, probably
a lot of them lost their homes. Mm-hmm. They're scared of this man. There's just a lot going on, right? 3 days after the 1910 hurricane, Watson got on his boat and headed toward the small wood store of Chokoloskee, where he always went. The people had been listening for the motor of his boat, and he was met by a mob of armed locals. Watson, at that point, he really tried to change their mind. He told him, look, I killed Leslie Cox. And,
he did go find Leslie Cox and kill him.
He did. And he said, look, he's the murderer. He said, I've got Cox's hat. He had it in his hand and he showed the crowd the bullet hole that was in it. But the locals told Watson that they were taking him to be investigated.
Yeah.
So they weren't planning to kill him.
Wasn't mob justice?
Yeah, no. But they were like, this is it. We're tired of this. But Watson reached for a shotgun. Yeah.
This guy.
And he tried to fire.
Yeah.
But it didn't fire because when he had came in earlier to buy some ammo, although he was good friends with the Smallwood store, the man himself, he would not even come out there and be a part of that.
Of
the mob. Because he's like, he always pays his debts. He's been good to me. I don't have a problem with him. But his wife did not like him. When he came to buy ammo, she sold him ammo that had been damaged by the flood during the hurricane.
Oh, wow. So that was like, she was thinking ahead.
She was really thinking ahead.
Man, that was a twist.
It was. So he reached for that shotgun, but it didn't fire. Before he could pull his pistol from his coat, the mob had shot him dead. He wound up with 31 bullets in his body. Then they tied his body behind a boat and dragged it to Rabbit Key Island, which was just a, you know, another little small island, mm-hmm. where they dug this shallow grave for his body. And they ended up stacking coral rock on top so that he wouldn't wash out into the water.
Hmm.
So several days later, Watson's remains were dug up. Later, when law enforcement finally came, mm-hmm. his remains were dug up. He ended up being buried in Fort Myers Cemetery, where he is to this day. It's interesting, though, because they unearthed about 50 sets of human remains scattered throughout Watson's properties.
On his property?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
But there are many who believe that he really was innocent and that those 50 skeletons could have been chalked up to the fact that Indians lived there. They felt like it was Indian burial grounds.
Perhaps it was Indian burial grounds, but the fact is, I believe he certainly killed several people.
He did, and he never shied away from the fact that he had murdered some people in self-defense.
Yeah, I don't buy it.
A lot of people think that the townspeople were worked up and afraid. A lot of them think that they were jealous of his success. Or what do you think? Do you think their concerns were valid?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. I think they were probably, I don't think they would have done that out of jealousy, but I do think they were worked up and afraid.
Yeah.
I'm sure they had run-ins with him.
Right.
I would have, yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
That story is nuts.
Yeah.
I have never heard this story.
Actually, for Father's Day, I bought my dad a book about it because I'm like, he's going to love this. Like, how have I not heard about this before?
Yeah.
So, there you go. Bloody Edgar Watson. There you have it.
Wow. Well, those were some hard times.
They sure were.
For his neighbors.
Yes.
Now, my wife's from Florida, and well, we spent about 5 years there when we first got married, so I know all about that life. And on the rare occasion when my wife looks at me with a little bit of disgust in her eye and reminds me that I look, sound, or act like a frickin' Yankee, I just smile and say, at least I'm not from Florida. Till next time, goodbye.